Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not
even if you can get it under us.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for the week that Governor Tony Evers signed the budget. We're grateful, right, J.R.? We're grateful. Let's go right to a summary of what Governor Evers said, some of what he said when he signed the budget. Didn't veto the whole thing. We'll get into that in a little bit. Please.
We were finally able to move the needle in the same Republican-controlled legislature we've had for the past 8 years. Today, I am signing a much better version of the legislature's budget with the understanding that we are nowhere near where we should be. I believe the people of Wisconsin deserve more. And through the veto promise, I am adding nearly $100 million more in per pupil aid for our schools compared to the budget that was passed by the legislature. First of all, the people that didn't allow Medicaid expansion to happen, many of them are up to vote, are up for election the next time around. We're going to get them to a better, we are going to get them either to a better place or we'll find better legislators to get us there. Because 70% of the people of Wisconsin have said they wanted it. You know, there's this idea that somehow I'm the hermit king and I don't talk to people. Well, the fact of the matter is, I've talked to almost every single legislator in this building. But in turn, I also have to say that getting out from underneath the bubble that we call the Capitol and going into the villages and cities and townships of this state is far more important to me, and I'll continue to do that also.
I'm going to use the term that Governor Evers tweaked the GOP budget. Fair term? He didn't really reshape it. Tweak.
Tweaked, removed a lot of earmarks, yes, and found a way to put more money into schools.
Okay.
I mean, the reality is that everybody's claiming a piece of this budget for different reasons. So for Evers, he's claiming, hey, he put $87 million more into K-12 categorical aids, although he took out $17 million for like these personal devices.
Laptops.
So, yeah. $65 million more for schools overall.
Right.
He nixed a lot of Republican earmarks, and he set down a marker about taking authority back from Republicans trying to put in a joint finance about oversight.
Yeah, he pruned their ability in the 1310. But let's walk down some of these vetoes, JR. As you mentioned, his vetoes added, although the governor said nearly $100 million, let's fact check a little bit.
Yeah.
The upper in K-12 is about $65 million with his vetoes. Deleted the job training requirement for food share recipients with children, killed $2.5 million to study tolls and mileage-based fees to pay for highways. That was interesting, JR, because he said, one more study.
Doesn't change anything.
We've had so much inaction. What is one more study going to do? But that was a priority of Speaker Voss.
Well, they wanted to look at the mileage-based fee, then they added the tolling piece to it in the kind of assembly amendment last week for the House package.
Yep.
And like the governor's saying, look, there's a different way to do this. Let's just move ahead. We've talked about tolling for years, which we have. Why do you need to do that? With the veto of the work requirement, actually what he did was he basically left the requirement in place. You can't eliminate current law if it wasn't in the budget. He nixed the money to do it.
Yeah.
So basically you have a requirement to do this, but there's no money to fund it, therefore it doesn't happen.
Right. He redirected $25 million from the Volkswagen settlement to alternative fuels and bus systems. He deleted the drug test requirement for food share recipients. He killed limits on local government's authority to regulate quarries. This is just a few of them, JR. Let's talk about some other things. He killed $5 million.
Yep.
To begin to buy land for a Green Bay prison.
But he kept the $5 million in the corrections budget for other priorities, in his words.
Right. I'm going to ask you this question. He said in his speech, I considered vetoing the whole budget. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. In my conversation I've had, I think there are people in the governor's office who argued for a full veto. The issue became who has the most tolerance for a long, protracted budget fight. And Republicans do, because Republicans have safe seats for the most part. So if this thing dragged in October, November, I don't get the impression Republican lawmakers would have felt a lot of heat because there aren't many swing Republicans left or swing seat Republicans left. They're mostly in safe seats. Other thing is, think about this budget was spent 5.6% more than the last one. There are people like Dewey Strobel in the state Senate who was on the Finance Committee and voted for this budget, even though he thought it spent a little bit more than he liked. How is a Dewey Strobel going to get to spending more money after this happened? How would you to Chris Cappinga, who voted for the budget, Republican from Delafield, who, you know, got a lot of negative publicity about the Tesla provision, which was vetoed, that he pushed to get in? How do you think he would vote for a more generous budget after what he went through? I mean, just the numbers weren't there to pass something more that spent more.
And capping a provision that would exempt Tesla from using dealerships to sell their electric vehicles was vetoed.
Yeah, no shock whatsoever.
No shock whatsoever. JR, I'm going to say that on May 15th, Fiscal Bureau issued that memo on revenue projections. And if you read that carefully, which I did yesterday, they said that corporate tax collections were going to be up $610 million over a three-year period because as a result of the Federal Tax Reform Act. That's when I think the Republicans said, we now have more money, we can come closer to him on K-12. They didn't get there, but they boosted some of his line items on health care. They both boosted spending 8% on transportation. I really think when the Fiscal Bureau memo came out, that's when the Republicans got serious about giving a budget that met him, maybe not halfway, but 40%.
Well, there's an old saying that Republicans or governors get like 75% of what they want every time anyway, because they set the table with the budget. Now look, go back to May as well. The lengthy list of provisions that Republicans pulled out of the budget, from medical marijuana to decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana to the Medicaid expansion, they took out a lot of stuff that governors put in. But the argument I've heard from the Evers people is, hey, because we're so aggressive with the budget we put out, they came to us with spending. Where were their priorities? They did a transportation package that didn't raise this gas tax, but hit Wisconsinites with fee increases instead. Spends about the same ballpark amount of money. On Medicaid, they knew the expansion, but they spent a lot more in state tax dollars to do things to expand health care.
Specific programs.
To increase reimbursement rates.
Yeah.
This is a different way.
Right.
Finally, with education, yeah, he wanted $1.4 billion. They did $505 million, something like that.
And his veto takes it up to $570. $570 million over two.
So he got in the right ball. He got in his ballpark of what he wanted. Just didn't get, the Medicaid expansion is the one thing that he really pushed that he got nothing on. There's absolutely nothing on Medicaid expansion. They just spent more on health care, but using state tax dollars for the federal money.
Okay, now let's talk about some of these other vetoes. He vetoed a Kaukauna bridge in the district of Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke. Go back to how did Representative Stephan respond to killing the $5 million for the Green Bay prison?
That is a middle finger for everybody involved, that he talked to Tony Evers and said, look, this is the conditions in this prison, and Evers called it inhumane. The problem is that, or for Evers, is he's pushing the idea of reducing our prison population at the same time that we have two aging prisons, Green Bay and Waupun. So what do you do? Do you replace a prison when you want to reduce the population? And how do you explain that to your supporters of, yes, I want to get all these folks out of prison and into alternatives, but we're going to go spend all these millions of dollars to build a brand new facility to house maximum security offenders. How do you do that?
Yeah, and criminal justice policy is indirectly tied to our marijuana policy, which a governor believes if you decriminalize, you would eventually, a lot of people in prison would be, a certain number would be out.
Numbers show also that if you want to reduce it by half, that you're talking about some violent offenders as well. So are you talking about like over a long, long period of time, you get the reduction of that significant number? To avoid releasing violent offenders, we're a long ways from that. But the bottom line is, how do you justify the money for a new prison when you're trying to reduce the population?
Okay, so you believe he seriously considered vetoing the whole budget?
Yeah, but I just think they realized that the political calculation was they were not going to win, most likely, long term on that fight.
He didn't have an end game. If he vetoed the whole budget, he didn't have an end game, because it's up to the legislative branch to approve appropriations. That's their charter.
There are Republicans in the legislature who would have worn as a badge of honor the idea of keeping the budget at base, right? They're taking a stand. Remember, we've had a great turnover in legislature since the last decade, 12 years. I mean, there aren't that many people left from the Act 10 debate in some ways in the Assembly anymore.
Very true.
So there are folks who are looking to leave their mark in that Republican caucus, and this would be a way to leave your mark by taking a stand against spending in Wisconsin.
And one other veto saved a $6 million cut in revenue sharing for the county of Milwaukee.
Yeah, because Milwaukee is the only county in the state where their child welfare services are taken care of by the state, not by the county.
Yes.
You're supposed to have your aid reduced because of this. It has been reduced since 2012, I think it was, came up during the finance process. But Democrats objected, saying, hey, you're dinging Milwaukee County, a time when they need money to do all these things. So he eliminated that reduction.
Okay, now let's listen to how Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald responded to the governor's signing the budget after those 78 vetoes, and then we'll talk about the statement issued by Assembly Speaker Voss. First, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald.
He basically signed the Republican version of the budget today. If you look at the list of vetoes that are there, and the welfare recipient drug testing stuff was brought up, but other than that, you know, you've got a veto on Green Bay Correctional. He moved around the DA positions throughout the state. He vetoed the Capitol Building Security Study, which surprised me. He did some stuff with the private well nitrate testing. I'm not even sure. The tolling study stuff was vetoed by the governor. He fully vetoed the aggregate, which I thought there was a deal between the Wisconsin Towns Association and the governor's office on that. So I was surprised to see that that was fully vetoed today. He did some stuff in DOT, a bridge up in Kaukauna, so there's a list of items, but none of them jump out at me so significant that I think you can make the case that he really changed the document that we passed on the floor of the Senate last week. So I'm pleased that he signed it, and I would say because for the most part our budget was kept intact, I think it's a good thing for Wisconsin.
We heard from Senator Fitzgerald. Let's take a look at the statement issued by Speaker Voss. The final budget is no longer a liberal wish list. Republicans eliminated the $1 billion tax hike and massive spending increase. We right-sized the budget, invested in the state's priorities, and reduced taxes on the middle class. Wisconsin has a good budget. JR, I want to stay with this a little bit because I want to read two statements from the governor's vetoes message dealing with the worker job training for food share and drug testing. Now, two quotes from the governor's veto message. There is no reason to treat recipients of this type of state aid differently than Wisconsinites who use any other type of state program or assistance. Statement one, I object to the burdensome requirements the legislature has imposed on the state's low-income individuals. Not language we heard in any Governor Walker bill signing.
No.
But then Speaker Voss said, the governor seems intent on trapping people on welfare, starving programs that incentivize work. I find that to be a very interesting exchange. Excuse me.
Democrats objected. Republicans pushed these changes in the past budgets. Governor Evers could not eliminate state law outside of the budget, so he cut the funding to do it. Essentially, neutered those programs by doing this. This is not where the focus or he wants the focus to be in this budget. He wants to be in education. This is a rub for Democrats and has been for several years. These programs the Republicans pushed.
Okay. Any response, any surprises in Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald's response to the budget, saying it's our budget? I mean, as you said, you had everybody claiming victory here.
Yeah, because everybody can claim a little piece of it, right? I mean, Evers can argue that they came to him in their spending increases, right? 5.6%. I mean, if you look on social media, there are plenty of conservatives who are not happy with a spending increase of 5.6%. Mm-hmm. Yet, you look at the Evers budget he introduced in late February, early March, whatever it was, there's no $1 billion in tax increases between the manufacturing and ag credit and capital gains.
Capital gains, yep.
There's no medical marijuana. There's no decriminalizing marijuana. There's no Medicaid expansion. I mean, the list is almost endless. It was 160-some items they pulled out in one shot.
Right.
So they reworked the budget significantly. So is this budget, and remember, go back 2 years ago, they produced a budget with a big increase in spending because they knew that then Governor Walker, had a vulnerability on education spending. They pumped the money in to shore up that flank. Didn't work. They put even more money into schools this time around. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's a more Republican budget than when the Evers proposed, but it's also a more Democratic budget than what they would have wanted to do in the past 8 years. So everybody gets this piece of something to claim victory about.
Senator Fitzgerald said that any attempt to veto override would occur in the Assembly because that was the house of origin for the budget. And Senator Fitzgerald said we might take a look at attempting a veto override on these provisions, deleting the job or worker training or drug testing. But I don't see any serious attempt to veto overrides because it wouldn't happen.
Unless you want another vote on somebody you think is vulnerable to put on a campaign lip piece next fall. No, you're not going to, because these things, when they passed before, they passed on party line votes, so you're not going to see a change.
Okay. Let's talk about another thing that happened this week. The governor signed a bill that would delay the closing of Copper Lake and Lincoln Hills. They were scheduled to close in January of 2021. This moves it to July 1, mm-hmm. Of 2021. But there's still so much swirling on the issue. It's one of these things that has to be resolved in the fall. So, yeah, we're going to formally delay it. But now you have this debate over where are you going to build three county-run facilities. Milwaukee, Racine, and Dane are interested in running county-run facilities, but counties like Fond du Lac have pulled out of that, saying we don't like the numbers. We think
La Crosse,
of money losers.
As well.
Thank you, and that's the other county. So, what's the issue before them as they sort through closing the juvenile prisons and building two state facilities and three county facilities, looking into the fall?
One, in the budget, Governor Evers moved some money around in the bonding to kind of get at the Type 1 facility, Mendota.
Is Type 1 the state run?
That's the state facility, the most serious offenders.
Thank you.
Let's start with there. Type 1 facilities. We've had the state has identified sites in Milwaukee County and up in the Appleton area. They got Hortonia, but the people in Hortonia don't want to see that prison located there.
I Not mean, quite in my honestly, backyard.
Quite honestly, the comments in a story in the Appleton Post-Crescent were quite enlightening, and not in a good way, about the attitude the people there have about, you know, the folks who would be coming into their community, mm-hmm. they're assuming, even though it would be people from their community who would be housed there, but that's a different story. Anyway, those two Type 1 facilities, they need to build those. There is money that Evers moved around the budget to kind of keep that process moving. But you've got to get things rolling. The people in Milwaukee have objected to having the facility built there because they said they didn't have local input. Another complaint you heard in Hortonia, there was no local input. This seems to be an issue for the Evers administration of not communicating more efficiently, effectively with other folks involved in things before making a decision. So now, if they had talked to them ahead of time, would have made it more acceptable? Maybe not. Because you're talking about a prison, and people get real nervous about things like that. So there's that piece. The county-run facilities, we've had three counties submit their proposals to the legislature for review, or this committee for review. That has to be done now. I'm not sure all the details of them, but they're kind of various levels of, hey, we have this facility already existing, we can rework this or build a whole new one. That process is going on. But they have to make decisions. They have to get a decision done because the longer you have Lincoln Hills Copper Lake open, the more chance you have for problems up there. Now, at the same time this bill was signed, mm-hmm. we got a report from the monitor.
The federal monitor.
Said things are improving. You know, there are signs of kids in a better place, but there's still problems up there. And this is the risk for Evers. The longer it's open, if there's an incident, it becomes now his problem. I mean, the problems existed. They kind of are owned by Scott Walker because it deteriorated under his watch. But the longer it's open, more it becomes the Evers issue to deal with than it is the past.
But I'm still intrigued by the remarks of the Fond du Lac County executive, which said, we looked at this, we think it'd be a money loser for mm-hmm. our county, too expensive.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Okay, another thing I want to, it's kind of fait accompli. On June 25th, the U.S. Supreme Court said federal courts will not get involved in gerrymandering. Now, mm-hmm. my assumption, JR, is they would still look for districts, they would still monitor on racial disparities, but they're not going to get involved in gerrymandering.
No.
So Wisconsin had a pending federal court case dating back to the 2011 lines drawn by Republicans. Judges this week formally dismissed it, saying in light of the Supreme Court ruling, challengers had no choice of winning. Judges gave Republicans until July 15 to submit claim for legal fees. And then Jay Heck of Common Cause put out a press release saying the issue is not dead. And Governor Evers said this remains one of my top priorities. So where do you think this issue goes from here?
The courts. So look, Republicans are not going to pass a bill to create a nonpartisan quote-unquote commission to draw the lines. They philosophically oppose that. I mean, there's an argument to be made that in the Constitution that authority is only given to lawmakers. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to say if that's a correct view or not, but Republicans don't believe in this process. They don't believe you can create a nonpartisan process to draw the lines. If they're not going to pass a bill, then what's going to happen in 2021? We're going to court. The question is which court? And I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to tell you which one, but it's state courts or federal courts. If you're a Republican, you probably want to go to the state Supreme Court because you're going to have a conservative majority. If you go to the federal courts, that's where I want to be if I'm a Democrat, because you've already had a 3-judge panel in Western District Court of Wisconsin rule these, well, that's where a partisan gerrymander.
Right.
So if you have a line that are lines that are close to those, you'd think they would have an issue with that. So that's my question, is which court do we end up in? And I'm not a lawyer, so I can't tell you where we're likely to go.
So responding to the June 25th U.S. Supreme Court decision, the last line in Governor Evers' press release was pretty interesting. I will veto any redistricting plan drawn on the 2020 census numbers that isn't fair. What's fair mean?
Good question. Hey, look, so here's the thing. Redistricting is the most political thing you can do in the legislature that is allowed, right? You can't raise money from your state office. You can't campaign from your office. But this is a purely political endeavor, and they've gotten really, really good at it. You know why? Computers.
Yes.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, they're drawing them, you know, kind of like figuring things out on the a little bit different process. Now, you can slice and dice these things 1,000 different ways in like very short amount of time to figure out what's most beneficial map to you. So, what's going to happen? You know, maybe they try and pass a bill. I don't even know if they even try, because there's no way they're going to get something done. There'll be a race to court and try and get a favorable venue to hear the case and draw the lines.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, a race to which court? It would seem in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, their only court of jurisdiction would be our state Supreme Court.
So, go back, because this is not about gerrymanders. This is about what lines should be in place. So it's a different ballgame. Again, not a lawyer. Go back, I'm trying to off the top of my head, but in 2011 was the first time, I think, in several decades that we actually had lines drawn by the legislature. They had been drawn by the courts in the past. I believe the federal courts several of those times. So, you know, what will happen is you'll have both sides submit maps to say these are how it should look, and the court will pick which one, or maybe the court will draw its own. You never know.
Right.
But it's just a matter of which court we end up in for the next round.
And just a Wisconsin Eye preview, I'll be interviewing three players on the issue of redistricting next Thursday, Newsmakers. JR, let's wrap up this way. Thoughts on biggest winners in the budget debate?
Good question. You could argue that, you know, schools won because there was so much emphasis on schools. You could argue that road building industry got a win because even though it wasn't the same methodology to fund it, we got to the same ballpark for spending as what Governor Evers had proposed.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that, you know, manufacturers who benefit from manufacturing ag credit were winners because there wasn't a tax hike that Evers had proposed.
And there was no dark store provision in there.
So, you know, it's hard to say who really truly won. And I don't know, what you're going to see for the next couple months is both sides try to spin this as their victory. Like their, you know, Republicans saying it's the Wisconsin budget, and Evers saying he made it more like the people's budget. I mean, he still said that the document fell short, in his words, when he proposed. So everybody can walk away saying they got something out of this, I think.
Well, any specific winners in terms of personalities? Did the governor win more than Mr. Boss, Mr. Fitzgerald, do you think?
Good question. I mean, you know, I've heard from Democrats who feel pretty good about what Evers is able to do. I've heard Republicans who mock the idea of all these Democratic lawmakers who voted no on the budget suddenly coming behind even the governor and, like, applauding him signing it, you know? So we'll see. There are definitely some things that, you know, the Tesla provision was an obvious loser because, hey, it was an easy veto because once the attention was placed on that provision as a way to get a vote or help get a vote, and the person, Chris Kappinger, had a connection to it, it became radioactive. So that was an easy one.
Became an earmark, excuse me.
Another interesting thing that people probably don't pay a whole lot of attention to is this dynamic of the balance of power in the Capitol. In this budget, Republicans made a big effort to put a lot of money in joint finance. So the Joint Finance Committee has an appropriation.
In their 13-10 account.
Basically, it says, okay, Steve, you're agency X, you want money, we're putting it in this pot, you come back and ask us for it with a plan.
And there's no better example. Didn't Joint Finance tell the UW system, mm-hmm. we'll give you $35 million. No, we'll put it in our 13-10 account. You come back and tell us how you're going to spend $65 million, then we may or may not approve it.
Yeah. There's a good example, the Historical Museum, they want to build a new one.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff about like bonding and coming back with a plan of joint finance. Governor Evers nixed it and said, no, you don't have oversight of this, you know, it's going to be over here. Why I bring this up is I think the seeds of this were sown back in December with the lame duck session. Okay?
I agree.
Republicans have been trying ever since then to pull authority away from the executive branch to say, no, we have this oversight, we're going to keep an eye on these things, we're going to change things. And ever since, it's been an effort to pull it back, the executive branch, which is obviously partisan because you have a Democrat as a governor and a Republican legislature. But there's also been a tension between the executive branch and legislative branch my whole time here, regardless of party, because governors want to consolidate power because they want to run the show. And lawmakers always talk about wanting to have it pulled back in oversight. Look at the Secretary of State's office or the Treasurer's office. I mean, like, this process began to strip them of authority like years ago under Tommy Thompson, even before that, slowly picking things away. Because why? Department of all, DOA, right? You consolidate authority under you and you can run things.
And Tommy even tried to emasculate the powers of the Superintendent of Public Instruction at one point, and that didn't go anywhere. It's July 5. Mm-hmm. We have a state budget. It's not August. It's not September. It's not October. Very interesting process.
Yeah. It also sets up, look, things like the aggregate piece of this budget.
The quarries.
So this is what it was. It basically set limits on what local governments could do to regulate quarries. The argument was that the easier it is to grab aggregate stone for road projects, the cheaper it is. But because you have like these quarries that are being limited how much they can do because of local regulations, mm-hmm. they can't bid to get contracts. Now, why are people upset about this? Because they know this is the one bill that has to get done. Look, we went back and looked the first 6 months this year. We are, I think, at a 20-year low for bills signed into law the first 6 months of a term. Why? Because Republicans knocked out all of these priorities the last 8 years. They have nothing really left of the big Republican priorities. Now they have a Democrat who doesn't agree with him on the things that are much more parochial among Republicans and, you would argue, more conservative. So things like the abortion bills, they're not getting agreement on those.
But the point on that is that the governor has now shown that he's not going to hesitate to use his vetoes. He vetoed four abortion bills. He vetoed the middle class tax cut, which is now part of the state budget. It's very, very, very interesting.
We had several transportation bills that cleared the legislature as part of a quote-unquote reform package of DOT.
Yep.
All on party line.
Yep.
I'm watching for those, the next vetoes. I mean, I'm not going to predict what a governor will do, but a bill passes out of both houses on party line votes, it's a good chance at least one of those is not going to make it into law. I'm not sure, though.
All right. Next week, let's take a look at the issues that are still alive, looking fall session, maybe even into next year, okay?
Okay.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for July 5.